Word of mouth.
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 Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. From Stravinsky Suites to Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, just about every field of art and entertainment has inspired scholarly works and criticism. Comics, not so much. But then there are plenty of people who would consider comics scholarship to be an oxymoron. Comics fans are known to be a passionate and devoted lot who talk a lot to each other, but who may have given up on the idea of explaining what is comics to outsiders. Scott McCloud has. He is author of Understanding Comics, The Invisible Art. Published in 1993, it is one of the seminal volumes for comic book writers and a fascinating guide for anyone interested in the creative process. And Scott McCloud, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
So a lot of American kids like you grew up loving comics and the guys in tights. When did you decide it was going to be your profession?
Well, I got into it at the age of 14 because I actually thought I was too old for comics before that. But a friend of mine convinced me to give them a try. And only a year later, at the age of 15, I decided I want to make the things for a living.
Hmm.
All the way through the rest of school, that's what I did.
Well, it is an art form, you point out early in the book, that suffers from low self-esteem. Is that your, was that your goal with Understanding Comics, to get some respect?
Yeah, that was part of it. I mean, certainly I felt that comics were worthy of respect, not so much for what we had done, but what we could do. Because I think all art forms really are just a blank page. You know, they're potential. And just as great movies occupy a pretty small minority of all the movies made, or great novels, a small minority of all the novels made, it was more important to me to convey the idea that comics were capable of greatness. And I do think they are, and I'm happy to report that in the last 15, 20 years, we've been finally living up to that potential.
Mm. They've been used as an art form for a really long time. You point out to us that there are pre-Columbian murals that were discovered by Cortez in the 16th century. There's the Bayeux Tapestry from the Norman invasion, and Hogarth's The Rake's Progress and The Harlot's Progress. These are historical documents for us. So what do they share as comics?
Well, all of them have this very simple idea that you're telling a story through pictures in sequence. The pictures occupy the different parts of a canvas at the same time. And what the reader does is really quite remarkable. We accept it as a kind of map of time. So as we move from one space to the next, we're moving from one time to the next. And all of these things that you mentioned and other things too, like certain Egyptian wall paintings, they all use that same basic storytelling technique. And it's something that we use today in what we call comics.
You, in the book Understanding Comics, I think wonderfully, for me, who is not somebody who passionately loves comics, but, you know, argued with my brothers and sisters over who got the funnies first on Sundays and, you know, read old classics, illustrated comics and Archies and that kind of thing. But you employ these visual tools that comics allow. And you write about the abstraction of comics, you know, rather than perfectly shaded, just the power of line enables readers to be sucked in. It gives us some kind of entry point. Why does that work? Can you explain that concept?
Well, there are different ways in which cartooning in particular, that way of simplifying the world, can really pull a reader in. One of them is that it's more universal. If you just draw a circle with two dots and a line to represent a face, you're representing every face there's ever been. Except for the occasional pirate with an eye patch, I suppose. And that has a power to it because the reader is then participating in the creation of a character, not just receiving this very detailed information about another. And in some ways, we see our own faces in that. So when you're reading Peanuts or you're watching The Simpsons, in a way, you're inhabiting those characters and seeing them as a part of yourself. And that can be very, very strong, very powerful, as it makes us feel like we're in almost a virtual emotional space.
It's that participation is with the reader that comes through so strongly in Understanding Comics. Like you point out to us the way that we read images and read into images as they move through the page. We are the silent accomplice. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, we're there alongside the artist creating the comic as we read it. The comic's only half done. They're just lines on paper until we arrive at it. So one of the examples I give is what happens between the panels. You know, there's no motion between those panels until we imagine the motion. So at one point, I say in Understanding Comics that to kill a man between panels is to condemn him to 1,000 deaths, because every reader is going to imagine a different scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have a one panel with the man being threatened, and in the next panel, you just see the scream, you know, sort of over a cityscape. We fill in that gap.
Yeah, and that's a tremendous jump. You have to take a moment to admire the mind's ability to make that jump, to make that connection. And if you look around you, you realize that we make that connection every day. When we see something on a supermarket shelf and we're only seeing just an eighth of what we're looking for, some soda bottle or a box of cereal, we're filling in the rest. We're imagining the whole.
Do you like comics? Do you love them passionately? Do you not understand them? Well, Understanding Comics is the title of a book that's considered a remarkable new Baedeker of the Toons, says Doonesbury writer and artist Gary Trudeau. It's kind of a guide to how to make comics and how to look at them and interpret them as an art form. Well, you spend a lot of time in this book explaining how comics do work on the mind, or how the brain participates, like how pictures can evoke sensation and emotional response, you know, the wavy lines rising up off the image of a tipped over garbage can or heat off a coffee cup or dizziness or pain. Why do these representations work on us?
Well, you know, it's funny because what happens is we begin by representing the world somewhat literally. And we see this in the evolution of pictorial languages, too, like Chinese. We just start literally drawing what we see. But gradually, over time, through abstraction, through repetition, they become more like language. There's something between a picture and a word that we see in these abstractions. So, for instance, there are these little sweat beads. Sometimes cartoon characters will have a little sweat bead on their forehead. And we know from experience this means they're nervous, they're upset, they're sweating, right? But gradually, cartoonists would draw that sweat bead further and further from the forehead until it became like just a marker, just a little tiny pictogram that simply indicated nervousness. And now a cartoonist could draw a robot and have that same sweat bead over his forehead,
mm-hmm.
even though he has no skin. There's no such thing as a sweat bead on a robot. But we understand it because now it's drifted into the realm of language.
Mm-hmm. How do you, as a comic artist, know how much to show and how much to just leave to the reader?
Well, it's funny. As a theorist, I'm always trying to work out these things to my satisfaction and explain them as best I can. But as an artist, when I sit down to actually write and draw a comic, I try to forget all of that and try to channel my own intuition and draw more from the heart.
Comics establish story. You know, there's momentum, there's movement from one action to the next. But yet in this book, you make many references to works of art that are established as great. You know, the static works of art, you know, Marcel Duchamp or Picasso or Munch. Do you want to establish how they operate in the same realm, comics and great works of art, or different realms? I mean, what are you trying to do here?
Well, you know, 20 years ago, I think it was more important to cartoonists, this notion of some kind of equivalency, the notion that comics could go toe-to-toe with other art forms that were more established, that had a richer history, at least in the eyes of the cultural elite. I don't think that's as important as it used to be. But I do think that those connections to the broader world of fine art are still important because, frankly, everything is connected. And I think it's wise for us to always be on the lookout for those connections that, yes, this week's Amazing Spider-Man or a graphic novel down at Barnes & Noble may have something meaningful in common with Guernica. It may have something meaningful in common with, an episode of Orange is the New Black or cake decorating. Everything is connected. And what happens is if you look at anything closely enough, eventually you find yourself drilling down to the core from which all human expression and communication comes from. You know, all of these are different aspects of the same human instinct to communicate.
You argue, or maybe I should say demonstrate through your drawings, that comics are one mass media, one form of mass media where you can still hear individual voices. I wonder what you mean by that.
Well, you know, it took me 5 years to do this latest graphic novel of mine that'll be coming out in a few weeks. It's called The Sculptor. And I thought, wow, 5 years is a long time. You know, a movie only takes, say, 2.5 years to put together. But then when I go to a movie, I'm looking at 1,000 names in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not even an exaggeration. I think there are about 1,000 for most movies.
You know, it always takes two songs now.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I thought, wow, I got to do this all by myself. I can't control exactly how people interpret it, but I think that this is an art form in which you have more control than almost any other. You're able to be very specific when you want to be, more so than, say, prose. But you can also pull back and allow the reader to participate more through simplicity, through iconography. The short answer is it's really good for control freaks, mm-hmm. basically. And I'm one of those, I'll confess.
I want to start with this idea of simplicity because we saw, you know, recently the attack in Paris against journalists and cartoonists specifically from Charlie Hebdo, the magazine there, largely for its content, but its drawn covers were the thing that really provoked people. Somebody was clearly a Muslim kissing an Orthodox Jew and, you know, saying it's stronger than hate with slobbering bits all over it. You know, these really worked on people. These really upset people. How would that work differently than a photograph, say, or a shaded line drawing of the same image?
That's a good question. It's not one that I've considered too much. I mean, exactly why drawn images can sometimes be more inflammatory than realistic images or photographs. But that does seem to be the case. And I think perhaps the cartoonist can organize the perceptions of the world and focus them in a way that in some ways can seem more powerful than someone who's just trying to slavishly imitate the appearance of things.
Mm.
You know, it's funny, there's a cartoonist named Joe Sacco who's a very responsible and hardworking journalist who will go to places like Palestine
mm-hmm.
or Bosnia and visit with and talk to people for months, even years, and then draw very detailed accounts of his visits. And in some ways, his work seems to have more power and more veracity, even though for all we know, he could have made it all up. But somehow there's a real power in that drawn image that says, this is a personal account. I lived this, and now I'm relaying it to you with my own visual voice.
Well, Scott McCloud, I feel like I got schooled today. Thank you.
Thanks, Virginia.
Scott McCloud is author of Zot and Destroy Comics and Understanding Comics, The Invisible Art. It's a graphic novel praised by comics artists and writers from Matt Groening to Gary Trudeau. And he says he's got a new book coming out, The Sculptor. When's it coming out?
The Sculptor should be out on February 3rd. Took me 5 years, and I love it like a baby koala. I hope people enjoy reading it.
Viens petite fille dans mon comic strip, viens faire des bulles, viens faire des
whip, des clip, crack,
des
bang,
des
blop,
et des
zip, shabam, pow, blop,
whew.
Stick around for more word of mouth. When we come back, we're going to talk to the co-hosts and creators of NPR's new show about science and human behavior. It's called Invisibilia, but we'll get a peek after a quick break.
Whee!